This is the Strang Report, the podcast to encourage you to experience the power of the Holy Spirit. And today we're going to hear some exciting reports about what is happening in Africa, specifically in the country of Nigeria, and more specifically about what God is doing through the next generation. My guest is my longtime friend, Ron Luce, whose ministry is called Generation Next, and he travels the world training leaders and pastors on how to reach the next generation. He contacted me when he was over in Africa and told me some of the things was going on, and I said, when you get home, you have got to do a podcast. I want to report this. We want to put it on charismanews.com, so stay tuned. You don't want to miss my interview with Ron Luce.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to you, Ron. I was just trying to figure out how long I've known you, but I think it's at least 30 years, and you have impacted so many people through Teen Mania and many other outreaches and ministries and conferences and books. And now you're just back from Nigeria and you are telling me exciting things. So what is happening in Nigeria? What did you see with your own eyes? And before you answer, maybe I should tell the listeners that in the studio with me is Jeff Struss, who is our director of content development. He's just joined our team and he will participate with me to interview you, Ron. So
it's great to be here.
What's happening?
Well, Nigeria is probably the best kept secret on the planet in terms of the revival that's happening there. So when you think revival in America, you might think, oh, a year or two, one building was filled. Well, think about the last 30 years. This nation of 205 million people, which is by far the largest nation in terms of population in Africa. We're about 330 million in America. They're 205 million. They've gone from 20% Christian to over 50% Christian. So think about this. Tens of millions of people are now Christian that weren't 30 years ago. They're about 50% Muslim, 50% Christian now in Nigeria. And so that means there's tens of thousands more churches all over the place. Tens of millions more Christians. I mean, it's fundamentally, it's sort of like everyone remembers the revival in South Korea in the 1970s and 80s. It's like what happened in the 80s or so in South Korea, only it's Nigeria right now. And so there are mega churches everywhere, massive movements, like the whole denominations, massive churches. And some of the examples of that, probably one of the most profound examples is a denomination that I had never heard of. I learned about it a couple of years ago when I first went to Nigeria, called Redeemed Christian Church of God. Now, this is a native Nigerian denomination, RCCG. It's led by Bishop Adeboye, and he's been leading it for about 30 years. When he took over, there were about 1,000 people in the whole denomination. Today, they think there are probably 15 million in the denomination in the span of 30 years. And with 40,000 churches in Nigeria, 8,000 more around the world, they'll do an annual conference. I've been there for it, where they'll get 3 million people gathered for a week. And they put them all under one roof. They've got a building there. It doesn't have walls on it, but it's 3 kilometers by 3 kilometers. They think it will seat 10 million. And it is a sight to behold. They meet there with all their pastors. 40,000 pastors come a week in advance for a pastor's conference before their annual conference. So I'm there for the pastor's conference of all 40,000 plus those that can come in from around the world. And it's just a sight to behold. And here we are in America. We haven't even heard about it. And that's just one denomination in Nigeria. So there's a lot of good news, a lot of miracles, but a lot of sustained move of God over the last 30 years that I think would really qualify as revival.
Wow. Well, we have reported over the years on Adeboye, not as much as we should have. And, you know, trying to cover that from the United States, it's, you know, you wag your head and almost wonder what you can believe. But I know he's affiliated with Kenneth Copeland, and it's just amazing what's happened. I'll tell my listeners that I've been to Nigeria only once, I was there in 2000. I was there with Reinhard Bonnke. He had invited me to go to one of his crusades, I guess you call them. It was in Lagos. And while I was over there about a week or so, and learned that Nigeria is the largest country in Africa in terms of population. You know, there are many countries in Africa, and Nigeria is huge. It's also a member of OPEC, which in some ways makes it a prosperous, rich country, except that that OPEC money stays at the top. It does not trickle down to the people. A lot of poverty in Nigeria. And at the Reinhard Bonnke Crusade, of course, he was well known for having a million people at some of his crusades. It was outdoors. You know, people question it. I will just say that because I was there and I was traveling with the team, they had a certain way of figuring it by putting marks, grids, squares on the ground, and then kind of counting the grids and being able to estimate. And I actually walked the crowd with him one night, and I satisfied myself that those many people were there. But I also remember sitting on the platform where I had a really good view and looking at the crowd and saying to myself, I'm seeing it with my own eyes, and I'm not sure I'm believing it.
Wow.
So that is my experience. And that was 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago. And the church was exploding back then. There was a lot of tension back then with the Muslim, particularly in the northern part of Nigeria. Lagos is in the southern part on the ocean. And so it wasn't so much in Lagos itself. I did not really see that, but you know, you hear stories and I heard stories from the Bonnke team. But you know, that was 20 years ago. I just wanted to kind of interject and say that I have a frame of reference. Adeboye was just beginning back then.
Wow.
He would have been considered successful, but nothing like you're describing. And he's such a man of faith. So this podcast is about you. Forgive me, Ron, for interjecting myself, but I wanted to just give that frame of reference and also endorse what you're saying by saying, to some extent, I've seen that with my own eyes.
And, you know, Bonnke had a huge impact. A lot. I mean, he's like the grandfather there in terms of, you know, he did so many crusades all over Nigeria. In fact, I was at his very last crusade there a couple of years ago and got to interview him as well. But and so they love him there. And all the spiritual fathers have great, connection in terms of heritage from him. There's also another leader there, Oyedepo, who has a church that seats 50,000, and he fills it 8 times every weekend. And so he's probably in his 70s or 80s, been around the block. And I will tell you about both of those guys. I know they have difficult names for us in America, Oyedepo and Adeboye. They are so humble. It is so unbelievable to see the massive movements that they lead. And when I was talking to Oyedepo, you know, I'm asking about, he started 2 universities and done this and done that, and, you know, crowds and this and that. And he starts telling me about this person alongside the road that he was talking to about Jesus. And I'm like, you know, he wants nothing to do with, you know, make me feel like I'm bigger than I am kind of thing. And very self-effacing and genuine. Same with Oyedepo and same with Adeboye. But this last trip, I was specifically with a pastor. His name is Dr. Paul Enenche. He's actually a medical doctor, and his wife Becky is a medical doctor as well.
They're in Abuja. Didn't he go to ORU?
No, he did not. But he, he's very well.
I met a pastor named Paul, and you're right. I always had trouble with those, pronouncing their names right. But I was thinking, maybe I went to his church. But go on with your story.
So he, So I met him a couple of years ago, and they were meeting. They had 7 services a Sunday in their present facility, with 5,000 in the main sanctuary and probably about 5,000 more in breakout rooms all over the campus. And they were in the middle of building a new church, a stadium church that seats 100,000. That was 2 years ago. So on my trip this last week, they finished it. They fill it every week. They have 3 services every Sunday, 6 a.m., 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. every Sunday. And they're not all filled, but they're way more than 100,000 people that come every week. And it's sort of a cross between, he preaches line upon line like a Miles Monroe, kind of like you want to write down every single word he says kind of a thing. But he also, I mean, demonstrable miracles that you just can't deny right in front of you. A blind girl got healed, you know, a number of different miracles like right in front of us. I was there for Easter Sunday. And I went to all three services. I thought, well, if he's going to take the journey, I'll do it too. And they butt right up against each other. So it's like 1 6.5 hour long church service with people coming in and out, you know, sort of while worship is going on between services. And it was just such a striking phenomenon. I mean, this is a first-class facility. It's like AT&T Stadium in Dallas where the Cowboys play. It's covered. It's air-conditioned. It's beautiful. And he gets a cross section of everybody, people that are wealthy and people that are poor from villages that come. He does crusades all over the country. You know, he's got a whole television network there. And he's a little bit younger. He's probably in his mid-50s. So he's probably the next generation below the other two fathers of faith that I mentioned a moment ago. And he invited me because they're in a bit of a crisis right now, not his church, but the nation. And that is, although this revival has been going for some 30 years, it's striking that they are not reaching the young generation. And they've heard the data about what happened in South Korea, where, you know, in South Korea with Yoon-Gi Cho and so forth, went from 2% Christian to 33% Christian in a Buddhist nation in one generation. That's a miracle. You know, his church grew to 1 million and other churches grew huge. But today, among the young generation in South Korea, it's 1.7% Christian. So they've fallen in generation from 33% to 1.7, actually less than before the revival. So Dr. Paul heard about this and said, we don't want that to happen here in Nigeria. What do we need to do? And asked me to come over. And I spent a week there with his team of 400 staff and then 100 other pastors that are kind of that fall under his umbrella that came together to talk about some of the best practices that I discovered with churches around the world when I was doing my doctoral studies at Regent University that are really excellent at reaching and discipling the next generation. And they think about it in a whole different way. It's not a youth department or whatever. It's really, it has to do with focusing on reaching and discipling those most likely to come to Christ. And all the data shows that's under 20 years old. Depending on where you're at in the world, it might be 18, it might be 16, it might be 13 years old. But these churches all focus on reaching them and then in a radical discipleship process once they come to Christ. And so it's not just a crusade for young people. It's not just a youth department. It's not a cool guy with a tattoo, plays the guitar. Hey, please come to church. Please, please. It's not that. It's a focused church growth strategy. And you think about it, who's trying to reach the 13-year-olds, the 14-year-olds? Well, it's the drug people, it's the gang members, it's the sex traffickers, it's the branding people that buy my chips, buy my shoes, buy my whatever. And so why wouldn't the church go after those that, you know, something about a 13-year-old specifically, some cultures have found that 13 is the sweet spot. It's sort of the bar mitzvah age where a 13-year-old, he kind of like, he doesn't know who he is. He's not a kid, but he's not an adult. What am I? I'm a teenager. And so he's trying to figure out who's going to accept me, who will like me. Is it the cool kids? Is it the athletic kids? You know, whatever. And they're just like fish waiting to be caught in a barrel. And it's our opportunity that we keep missing and missing because we've sort of, we, the Western church, have kind of been doing the same construct of youth ministry. Get a cool youth guy. He lasts for a few years. Kids go to college. They come back. They say, oh, that's not my church. That's my parents' church. That's my parents' pastor. My pastor left. And then the pastor doesn't know what to do, so he just hires another guy. And the same thing happens again and again. We lost most of Generation X. We lost the millennials. We're about to ready to lose Z. We keep using the same construct with the definition of insanity, doing the same thing, hoping for a different result. And I was so encouraged to see probably a dozen churches I found around the world that are doing something fundamentally different with a different paradigm that then we put in my dissertation, I put into master classes, and now I'm going and come alongside churches that are wanting me to come personally where I can, like Dr. Paul, to say, okay, it's a different premise. It's a different framework. It's a different paradigm of ministry. But if you're going to play the long game, this is the way to go. You know, there's this whole thought where, well, if you reach those young people, they don't have any money. So you have to keep the tithers happy. Well, I can tell you about one of the churches that I met with in Singapore, that their average age in their church is 21 years old. And they've got 4,500 people, and they have raised more than $30 million through teenagers over these 20 years that they've, you know, building buildings and things like this, teaching them how to be entrepreneurs and this and that, raise money, do stuff online. And so it's a different paradigm. And I'm encouraging pastors to think about, I think there's been a big frustration. Like, we know we're not reaching youth, a lot of pastors feel this, but we don't know what to do. And when you finally kind of come to that, quit pretending like, oh, we have a camp, we have this, we have that. You know, we want to talk about our efforts rather than what the real results are. What is the data showing us? And, you know, the data showing that the church around the world, here in America and around the world, is getting older and older and older. And that's just indicative that we're not passing the baton of the gospel to the young generation. And so in South Korea, they've closed 10,000 churches in the last 10 years because everybody just got old and died.
Wow.
And it's unnecessary. It doesn't have to happen here. And so it's think about like somebody who owns a Major League Baseball team. They also have a farm team, a AAA team. They send scouts to universities and to high schools. Then there's thousands of Little League teams all over the country. So if that owner, that manager is having a bad year, he's not fretting too much because he knows 2-3 years, he's got a team coming up. He's playing the long game. He doesn't go out to the street corner with a megaphone. Hey, anybody know how to pitch? Anybody know how to hit? He doesn't get flustered and freak out. He's got a system where he's going to play the long game. And he's going to have a great team, but the process to building that. And that's really what the exponential church model is really all about. That's why I went to Nigeria to teach Dr. Paul. And he announced to his church several times, Ron's going to be coming back many times to help us implement this. And so it's not if you're a pastor and you're thinking, oh my gosh, you want me to change my whole church? It's not as dramatic as you might think. Think about your church as a train. And on any train has two rails on the track. One rail is everything you're doing at your church now that works. Just keep doing that. Just keep doing that thing. And we're going to help you build a second rail that's an exponential rail. It's reaching and discipling those most likely to come to Christ. It's a whole systemic way, not an event-driven, but a systemic-driven way of growing your church for the long term so that you're going to have strength and building. So you're not just reaching them, but you're discipling. You're building a pipeline. So when they get saved at 13 or 14, each year you're scoping and sequencing their faith. So where do you want them to be at the end of 14, the end of 15, just like the school system, the end of 16 and 17. So they emerge at 21, 23, 25 years old. Their roots are deep. They've been leading for a while. They're deep in their faith. They can teach it to others. And it's not a hope. Well, we hope the church, you know, stays strong. No, we have confidence because we've learned best practices from around the world.
Well, this is exciting, and we want to find out a little bit more about that. Jeff, do you have some questions?
Yeah, Ron, I was wondering, you know, here in the States right now as we're recording this, we're seeing really when you're talking about next generation coming to Christ, I'm thinking about what Sean Foyt is doing with Let Us Worship. There's other groups like Maverick City Worship where the worship culture, if I can put it like that, is almost becoming a net where the next generation is coming into the kingdom. Now, you're talking about a systematic way of discipling and raising up the next generation. But I've heard you talk about evangelism. I've heard you talk about the signs and wonders. I wonder, is there an equivalent in Nigeria to the worship movement among the young people, or is it completely different?
Well, so don't get me wrong. There is fanatical, crazy worship. Like, okay, what I never seen this before. They dance for an hour,
yeah,
and then they dance for another hour. Okay, I saw a worship leader tag out after an hour, and another worship leader came out because he'd run out of steam. And another guy came in and continued the worship going, like tag team wrestling. It was amazing. So they know how to worship. However, there's not a huge youth movement right now in Nigeria because there hasn't been a focus. And in fact, some of the guys that are, you know, in some of these movements that I was telling you about, that have been involved for a while that said, if I was 20 years old right now, I don't even know if I would be interested in this movement. It wasn't like it was 30 years ago.
Wow.
And I don't know if it would be attractive. What's happened is the internet has created kind of a global youth culture. So the young people in Nigeria, they feel like they're part of that group. I mean, they look at their phones, they're on all the, you know, Instagrams and everything like this. And that religion, that Christianity, that's my parents' tribal thing. That's their like wild thing. But I'm part of the cool, we watch MTV, we watch this and that. And you know, in terms of Western media and that kind of thing. And so this is a barrier that they don't know how to get over. And so that's kind of why we went there. So there's not really, to my knowledge, a worship movement there. But what we did is try to help them think deeply about, okay, so what these churches do, they don't just say that these exponential churches, they don't just say, oh, we hope we can reach a few. They think about it differently. So listen to this. This is so amazing. So they'll think about, they'll figure out from the age group from 13 to 19 years old in their city or in their state or their region, which of that age group is the sweet spot, the most likely to come. So for example, if they figure out that 13-year-old is the sweet spot, they think about how many 13-year-olds are in our footprint. Now, when I first heard that from the church in Singapore, I said, what do you mean footprint? He said, I'm not talking about how many 13-year-olds in our church. I'm talking about any school represented that anybody comes to our church from any of those schools, we're going to figure out how many 13-year-olds are in all those schools, and that's who we're going after. So they think about it missionally, just like if you were to move into a city or a country and that nobody was Christian, you'd go after those most likely to come to Christ. Just like when Paul would travel, he'd go to the synagogue first because at least they were, you know, had a theology of one God and that kind of thing. You could build on that. And so this is what they do. They go after the 13-year-olds. So if they figure out there's 30,000 within our footprint, we figure out, okay, how many each year do we want to reach of those guys? And a couple times a year, do a dramatic effort to get them in the building, you know, through, you know, big events, this and that, fun things, whatever. And then do a dramatic call to Christ. And then it's at that point where there's a very clear systematic discipleship process, small groups. You've got 14 and 15 year olds that have been trained to disciple. And so they meet them at the altar and they start a very full court press, relationship building, and a full court press. I would say it's sort of like Red Bull for your faith for the first 2 years.
That's like a funny way to put it.
Oh, it's true. One guy told me this. I've only found a couple of these churches in America. One is in Los Angeles. Jason Lozano said this. When you get saved in my church, the first 2 years is like going to youth camp full time for 2 years. That's how deep it is. And it's not waiting for 40 years for somebody to get their mind renewed and this and that. Let's take them on a deep dive. Let's get them delivered. Let's get them set free. Let's get them full of the word. Let's get them leading when they're, you know, 14 and 15 years old. So they're in a small group and now they're leading a small group. It's a very systematic approach, but it's also life-giving. It's not like finger pointing authoritarianism or any of that kind of thing. It's very life-giving. And I call it sticky. In marketing, they say, you know, when you see an ad or a movie trailer that you can't forget, they call it sticky. It's a sticky gospel. It's so life-giving. You can get out of the web, but you got to really try because it's so life-giving. You don't want to leave.
Boy, that's exciting. In the few minutes we have left in this podcast, actually, it's kind of a little longer than normal. Can you kind of give us what I'll call the bullet points? That's what we call it in journalism. Do other people, Jeff, call it bullet points?
Sure.
Hey, sure. Just the highlights of these principles that you share with these pastors. And maybe we can do another podcast where we drill down a little bit more, but I don't want to leave the listener hanging. I want them to know what you tell these pastors about reaching the next generation.
So there's several best practices we've curated, and of course we got to be careful. We don't try to copy and paste. We just do this when a miracle happens. We got to take the best practice and wrestle with it, with the DNA of our church, the culture of our city, or our town, our region, that kind of thing. But first best practice is that the senior pastor owns the strategy to go after the next generation. You can't subcontract out to a youth pastor, and that is, think about the guy who runs Viacom. He's not young and cool. He's an old white guy that has a lot of cool young people that work for him. And Viacom owns MTV, MTV2, Nickelodeon, all of this kind of stuff. And his job is to be the strategist, how to get eyeballs to watch our young, cool stuff. That's the role of the pastor, the senior leaders of denominations and things like that. It's sort of like David, even when I'm old and gray, Lord, give me the next generation. It doesn't matter how old we are. Our job is to make it Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, a generation to generation faith. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that they really focus on who's in, like, if you think about an exchange zone in a relay race, you can't pass the baton before or after, only in the exchange zone. So think about who's in the exchange zone, those most likely to receive Christ in your town, the 13 to 19 year olds, and really scientifically, just like if you were starting a business, you can't go after every customer. You have to go after the most probable customers. And so same with Jesus. He did the same thing, because I think we get a little bit dissonant. We go, well, Jesus loves everybody, so let's try to reach everybody, and we don't reach hardly anybody. But he also prioritized. So he spent more time with the 70 than the crowds, more time with the 12 than the 70, more time with the 3 than the 12, based on receptivity. So must we. So we teach them how to find those people, how to prioritize them. And then, of course, we teach them how to systematically, because that word discipleship, we don't really know what it means in America, I don't think. It's the four classes you take after you get saved, rather than a lifelong falling in love, becoming more like Jesus every day for the rest of your life, and getting them on that quest very young. And probably the most important thing is we teach them to find a Joshua. And what I mean by that is, you know, Moses had Joshua hanging around with him for some 40 years. And, you know, he went to the Sinai a couple of times. He's the day the sun stood still, he's, you know, leading the army that day. He's in the tabernacle hanging out with him, 40 years carrying his briefcase. Find a Joshua to do that, because, you know, when Joshua and Caleb died, it was not long right after that scripture is written in Judges, a generation rose up that did not know the Lord or the miracles of their fathers. And so even though Joshua had seen and Caleb, they saw lots of miracles, you know, the Jordan River dried up and all that. They even put stones up there to remember the miracle every time you see the stones. But apparently the miracles weren't enough. Whatever Moses did for Joshua, apparently he did not do for the next generation, even though they had lots of miracles. Scripture says they rose up and they didn't know their father. So I encourage pastors, go find a Joshua, go find a 13, 14, 17 year old and just listen to them. You know, look, try to see life through their eyes. What do you listen to? What do you value? What are your friends listening to? And the more you listen to them, the more you'll love them, the more you'll pray for them, the more you'll care for them. And everything could be driven by that rather than a program that you start.
Boy, that's exciting and so encouraging. And I appreciate the vision that you have for the next generation. Your entire adult life has been that. And, you know, I need to focus on this more in what we cover both on my podcast and in Charisma. So thank you for the motivation. As we wrap up this podcast, Jeff, do you have any last question for Ron to give us a final word?
Well, you know, as I was listening to you, Ron, what I was thinking of, I was actually thinking of Acts chapter 6, where you have the early church moving in revival, moving in signs and wonders, with the true gospel being preached, and everything had the potential of coming to a screeching halt because of bad administration. And they had to, you know, set in leaders in place and get things in place. And to me, when you're talking about this system of best practices, it really sounds like Holy Ghost administration. Is that a good way of putting it to some extent?
It's interesting you should say that, because when I started seeing these exponential churches, it felt like watching an eagle in flight. It's like watching the book of Acts in motion. Like, oh my gosh, this is what it looks like. Because I can tell you, Steve, you know, we did all these mass events. Some 3 million young people come to our events over all the years here in North America. And the most common question I got from pastors is, how can we do this in our church, in our city, in an ongoing basis? And I had nothing to tell them, because I had never seen it with my eyes until now. I've seen these examples around the world, so I know it works in culture after culture. And so I think you're right. In terms of bad administration, where we've had a construct or a paradigm, this is what a church looks like. These are all the departments, and hope you have it good, and this kind of thing, rather than thinking about it from a different paradigm, a different point of view. And so I just want to give hope to pastors. Like, you know, there is a way out of the situation that diminishing churches and the aging, I call it the grain of the church. There's a way out that's so life-giving. So, and you don't have to reinvent it yourself. You don't have to figure it out for yourself. We can learn from others that are doing it right now and then apply it to your context.
Well, thank you. And boy, you have built a fire under me. I was even thinking of a few teenagers that I know in my sphere, and, you know, I'm not that close to them. And I thought, you know what, I need to know these young guys and just ask them what they're listening to. So I learned something. I guess they say that an old dog can learn new tricks. Is that right? And hopefully my listeners
are inspired. Yeah, they call it reverse mentoring. Let the young generation mentor you on their perspective on life. So yeah,
does that mean I would do better with my iPhone after that? I
exactly. You can figure out what those apps are for.
Yeah, the ones I never use because I don't know how. And
yeah, exactly. And those blinking lights in your VCR go away.
Yeah. you've gone from preaching to meddling now, but I know a lot of my listeners are in the same category. I hope that you'll share this, put it on your social media, share it with your own pastor, maybe. You know, we want to get the word out. This is so important. And Ron Luce, I want to do other podcasts with you and maybe some articles and share some of these principles on the platform that we have to motivate other people. You know, we're talking about experiencing the power of the Holy Spirit. That's kind of the little motto, maybe it's cliche, that we use for this podcast and really for Charisma Magazine. That's where I picked it up. But this, boy, this is where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? And thank you for taking time. I know you're getting over jet lag probably, but this was so important. We wanted to get the word out right away. Thank you to my listeners for tuning into the Strang Report today on the Charisma Podcast Network. Tune in again tomorrow for another podcast. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.